Welcome along. Jude Bellingham cut a frustrated figure at half-time with Almeria 2 up at the Bernabeu. Don't worry, Jude, you're not a Birmingham City player anymore. You might find your decision goes your way here. They started releasing the audio of the VAR conversations. I can only imagine in a bid to have it abolished. We suspected the whole process was dreadful, and so it proves. Hey, mate, I know you were only 3 metres away and had a perfect view, but we've got a freeze frame here that shows that you're wrong. Is there, by any chance, the big club going to get the decision in their favour? Wow, how did you work that out? Yes, miraculously, Real Madrid came back to win against bottom club Almeria, whose players, and credit to La Liga TV for broadcasting this, openly questioned the honesty of the process immediately after the game. Xavi hinted darkly at sharp practice. How can Barcelona be expected to win La Liga in the face of this sort of thing? I mean, you're 8 points behind Girona, so maybe that's another factor. The only law that Girona break is one that says that the small teams have to be defensive. It'll be a relief for everyone when we get to the summer and their squad can be ransacked by richer, more deserving ones. Cadiz gave a vote of confidence to their boss Sergio after their 16th league game without a victory, and after their 17th, they sacked him. I want to thank the players for everything, he said in a statement that can be read two ways. I've just been sacked. Cheers, lads. Well, we haven't won since match day 4, and you look like a bloke who's just climbed out of the crowd and stood in the technical area, so don't blame us. Yes, had some great individual performances, some great games on Sunday in particular, some fine goals as well, and Bryce Mendes, give us a smile, son, you've scored. there we are. So there's only one place to start, Terry. Well, we need to. How was your
trip over? There's a few.
Yes. How was your trip over to and a slightly dicey journey back as well?
Yes. I don't know if people know, I'm not a particularly good flyer and I do it quite often. I have a ritual I go through on takeoff, which involves AC/DC as loud as possible in my headphones because I can't bear the noises. Panics me.
What song? Have you got a particular song?
Back in Black.
Right. Okay.
I play the drums while I'm sitting there. So anyone sitting next to me knows, but it will look rather bemused while I'm tapping my feet, tapping my hands and playing the bass drum. And I shut my eyes and I try to cling on for dear life if there's any hint of turbulence.
Right. Oh,
God, did we get some turbulence yesterday morning. It was a 5:45 a.m. flight, so I did the work at La Liga. Went back to my hotel room, found the NFL Green Bay Packers on Austrian TV in the hotel room, happy as Larry. Taxi at 4 o'clock, 5:45 a.m. flight. And I think because we were the first, this is my assumption, that no one has been out that on that route that early in the morning. And about 40 minutes in, it was just like we'd hit something. And then it stayed like it for 30 minutes. And we had people with nosebleeds, people being sick. I was nearly being sick. I had to apologise for my swearing. We were told to take our headphones off. I literally was waiting for brace. It was pretty traumatic.
People genuinely haven't got back, have they?
It just stopped. Out of nowhere, it stopped. We had flashing lights, the beeping, the beep when it's the seatbelt, ding, the seatbelt. That was just non-stop going ding, ding, ding. And the plane, it was like watching, I felt like Tom Hanks in Castaway when he was in that plane and it was rolling around. It was the worst I've ever seen, worst I've ever experienced. And then a guy sitting across the aisle to me said, "You okay?" And I went, "Not really, no." I said, "Was I swearing loud?" He went, "Yep." but then it just stopped. I thought we had about an hour and 20 minutes to go, and I was thinking, I can't do this. And then it just stopped. And the pilot said he's been in touch with air traffic control. It should be okay from now on. There was no warning that we were going to hit that. But when I got home during the day, the storms did pick up. So I'm guessing we caught a bit of that. So just as I'm getting my head around the takeoff, after all this time, I'm okay unless I can deal with normal bit of turbulence, but this was chucking us about all over the place.
Yeah, well, it was really stormy because other flights haven't made it back, have they? Some people got taken to Stuttgart or somewhere, Frankfurt or somewhere, didn't they? Imagine that.
Yeah. And on top of that, I was there Friday and Saturday, so I had the 1-0, the 2-0, the 1-1, 1-0, 1-0. And then came back Sunday and watched the Goal Fest, which was 5, 10, 16.
Yeah, is that right?
22
goals in 4 games yesterday. On Sunday. Yes,
I had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yes, everybody scored. By the way, we're doing this Monday morning. I can't do tomorrow, so the disrespect to Granada and Atletico, I'm afraid, we'll have to pick that up with this Copa del Rey to come as well, so we'll pick that up with Patreons later in the week. We need to talk about VAR, Terry. Here we are again. I mean, people talk about VAR. I criticise TV companies for making it all about referee decisions. There's no way around it in this game.
No.
The VAR footprint on this was... It's like, you know, it's like a herd of wildebeest. So Almeria 2-0 up at half time. I mean, they're 1-0 up within a minute. Starting, aren't they?
Good goal, Ramazani as well. He took it well. It didn't look spectacular because Kepa got a touch to it, but he gave the goalkeeper the eyes, didn't he? It was a quick break and finished it off nicely from a player that hasn't been scoring many in a team that don't get any wins and got very few points. It was a really confident performance. They were good the week before against Girona. They should have been Girona. But I still didn't give them a prayer in this game. I mean, you're talking about a team that hasn't won against a team that you could argue is top. They got a game in hand on Girona. So the chances didn't appear to be very bright for Almeria. But the way they swept into the game looked like they had genuine belief they could get something from this match. So great start for them to get the opening goal. And the first half, they were good. I mean, you could argue, and that Real Madrid had more the ball, but they never really got going. And then Edgar Gonzalez with a fantastic strike rifles another one into the top corner. And then you think, oh, this is going to be tasty. I still thought Real Madrid would come back, not necessarily win, but I thought there was a couple of goals in them, certainly in the second half. But it was the manner, the refereeing of the match. Yeah.
It's all about the VAR, isn't it? It just is because there are three huge decisions in this game. The Almeria players, understandably, after the game, like I say, credit to La Liga TV, because one of the problems I got with La Liga TV is that obviously you're there, you're being paid via Media Pro, but essentially by the governing body. So it's very hard to. If you need to absolutely slaughter La Liga, it's very hard to do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be on again if I did that. Yeah, people have gone down that road and it hasn't. You do have to be aware that you are. In general terms, though, I think I've never been told that.
Yeah.
You kind of assume that. But there have been times where I've been on programmes and people I'm working with have gone against. As long as it's done in the right way. I think that's it. Yeah. It's okay. As long as you're not just doing it and taking the mickey out of the league and this and that.
Yeah.
You have to be diplomatic. We can't ignore certain issues.
Exactly. We can't ignore the VAR here. And the Almeria players afterwards were basically saying that all things are ridiculous, all things are farce, we've been robbed. So let's do the decisions in detail, shall we? That's all we can do, I guess, isn't it? So the order, so we do the handball first, the first handball that leads to the penalty.
By Kaiki.
Yes, correct decision.
No. And do you know what? There was a giveaway. Not one Real Madrid player appealed for a penalty.
Yeah.
They appealed to a corner.
Yeah, they could have just missed it.
They were happy with a corner.
The thing with, this is the re-refereeing that we're going to get into, isn't it? When they show the referee it, he starts on a freeze frame with the ball on his arm.
It's
the case for the prosecution. They're not giving him. He is both sides of this. And they didn't show him what was potentially a foul by Rüdiger.
There's two fouls.
Yeah. And the one
Rüdiger
by,
and Hosselu.
Hosselu, yeah.
Yep. There was Rüdiger clearly is a foul. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's holding his opponent down on the ground and riding on the top of him.
You could argue that
he doesn't touch it.
That he doesn't interfere with the actual bit of play. But they re-refereed it because they didn't show the ref what had happened there.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And then Hosselu, you could make a case where he was leaning on the back of Kaiki. You could then make a case for Kaiki he hasn't got his arm outstretched and trying to block the ball. He's trying to jump with an opponent on his back and the ball's missed the two players ahead of him who are less than 50 centimetres, less than a metre away in front of him. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, on so many aspects of that, it wasn't a penalty. It was, I genuinely, obviously, if you put your arm outstretched and you're standing there and it hits it, we've got no issues with that. We know if it hits the arm, it's a penalty. He was jumping up. It was a packed penalty box. in that close proximity to each other with four players all fighting for the ball. And as I say, when it went out for the corner, that's the only appeal that Real Madrid players made, was for a corner.
Yeah.
And then for VAR, it looks like VAR, we found something. We can get involved. We can give a penalty to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And so, convince the referee on the replay that, as you say, the first thing he saw was, if you're looking at that on its own, it's a penalty.
Yeah.
Because the arm is slightly out, but you're taking it completely away from the context of four players close together, two Real Madrid players.
Yeah. It's a massive
interfering
problem
with the Almeria defenders.
Yeah. What do you show the ref? Yes. Because you're not supposed, it's supposed to be clear and obvious. Once upon a time, it was supposed to just correcting things that the ref had missed, that obviously if he hadn't missed, he would have given a different decision. It's that, isn't it? It's stuff that you've missed. So someone punching someone off the ball, you didn't see it, I can't give it. Here's a picture, have a look, give it.
Yeah.
But not this. So that's 0-1. So the second one then is the Vinicius handball. I mean, people wanted consistency with handball, and they got consistency, and basically Real Madrid got this one as well. So...
The only one I've ever seen like this was Benzema. Do you remember at the training ground when he scored a goal? And the argument then was the, during COVID, the shirt sleeve.
Yeah.
It kind of does hit, which I think is a nonsense rule, because if you put a football on anybody's arm,
yeah,
from the shoulder down, it's going to be the bicep. It might creep down below the elbow. It might touch a bit of the shoulder. It's quite a big object to put on someone's arm.
Yeah.
My problem with this one, and I don't think it should have been given as a goal, was there was a deliberate movement from Vinicius to actually direct the ball towards goal with the arm.
Yeah.
It's almost like a arm punch.
Yeah, I would slightly disagree in that I agree exactly that's what happened, but the handball law doesn't account for that. It's basically, as long as it's pure, and he's got quite big shoulders, to be fair, hasn't he? He's got a lot of muscle there. And he does like whack it with his shoulder, doesn't he? He shoulders it in. Now, if he has successfully shouldered it in and none of it has touched the flesh below the sleeve, then it's fair enough as a goal.
Yeah, I agree with that. But this,
but
if you put a ball on your shoulder now,
it would
if you did it purely with the shoulder, it'd be shoulder and face.
Yeah.
There's no room for the ball between the shoulder and without it touching the face. So when you drop the half and half and it's below, you're talking about the bicep as well as the shoulder. And I just,
what they can't be
when
sure.
I saw the replay, I thought, no. But there was an angle that I clearly, there was some angles I thought hit the shoulder, but there was some angles which clearly show it's shoulder and bicep.
Yeah.
And they didn't, that's the angle they didn't show the referee.
Yeah, yeah. And so, they can't be, because they've re-refereed it, they can't be sure that there isn't a bit of hand in there, and the ref gave the foul. He gave the handball, didn't he? So it was no goal.
Yeah.
So they should have stuck
with it.
That's
what the referee gave, and then VAR got involved and overturned.
Yeah.
So he went and looked, didn't he? Did he go and look at that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
so we're saying 0-2 for the VAR. So, and then there's a crucial one. So then...
They're going to be 0-3.
No, hang on.
Change it on this one.
No, I've got
either.
The time wrong. Because they went 3-1 up, didn't they, Almeria? They should have gone 3-1 up, shouldn't they? But for the... when they scored, it was 1-0, wasn't it? So it was between the 57th and the 67th minute, wasn't
2-0.
It?
2-0.
Yeah.
Almeria were 2-0 up at half-time,
and then
they?
Bellingham got the penalty.
Bellingham got
2-1,
the penalty. Vinicius,
and then it's the
67.
Disallowed goal. Then it's the disallowed goal comes in between the two. It would have, they went 3-1 up in theory, didn't they? But they didn't. Because, see, this for me is the worst one, because the referee is literally, what is he?
He's
three yards away from...
Yeah.
And
no one had a better view than the referee of that incident, and he didn't give it.
And he saw
if he'd given it at the time as a foul, I probably wouldn't have had a complaint.
Yeah,
on slow motion and replay, the arm swings round, it's not an elbow in the face. Bellingham makes the most of it, because when you see the replay, Bellingham goes down hoping there's going to be a foul, and immediately he holds his face as if he's been hurt, but gets up quick enough to be chasing back to stop the counter attack.
Yeah.
So there's a significant period of time after the alleged foul. There's a bit of work to do for Almeria to continue and break and score the goal. And as you said, the referee was in the perfect position. Mm-hmm. So they're practically telling him even though he's seen it, and made a decision. You're wrong.
He's in the shot.
Disallowed a goal.
That's the exactly thing, isn't it? When they show him, it's like he's there looking at it.
Ludicrous.
Yeah.
So again, that's I can't agree with that decision either. Yeah. So when you're Al Maria and you're Vicente Moreno and you've got one, you've got two, you've got three, you will feel that hard done by would be an understatement. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting for one moment there's a fix. I've said before on the podcast, having played for Manchester United and Spurs and for Coventry and Wimbledon, I was always aware of the advantage and disadvantage of being a bigger club and aware during my career when I was playing that you had more chance of a decision going your way when you were playing for Man United and Spurs than I did for Wimbledon and Coventry. It's just, that's how I felt. Mm. And I was quite fortunate. I didn't only play for Man United and Spurs. I did have experience of both. I haven't been playing for Coventry and decisions going against us at Man United or against Spurs or, you know, and thinking, but that's not fair, you know? So there is, and has been a bias towards the bigger clubs, not just in La Liga, everywhere.
Yeah.
But this one, it would be hard to take. You're Al Maria, you've got 6 points, you haven't won a game, no one's given you a chance away from home against Real Madrid. You're working so hard in miserable circumstances to get a win, to get something, to not get thrashed at Real Madrid, that would be a start. To be 2-0 up and to feel aggrieved after the game that you've had a goal disallowed, you've had a penalty go against you, you've had a goal that possibly should have been disallowed for a handball. All three decisions that could have gone in their favour, all three went against them. So it's not great, I have to be honest. I mean, if one had gone Real Madrid's way, if two had gone their way and one Al Maria, then maybe, but it's 3 out of 3 for one team. Dramatic game, really good game, dramatic game, unexpected dramatic game. And if we're talking about football, Ancelotti admitted he got it wrong, should have rested some players, should have freshened it up, which he should have done. And I'm amazed he didn't, to be honest, bearing in mind the opponents. You know, the Copa del Rey match in midweek went to extra time. Both sets of players after that game, I thought it was fabulous, that match, because you could see after the game how much the players had given it. You know, you see close-ups of Bellingham and Griezmann and people like that, people that played the 120 minutes. They'd given absolutely everything in that match. Fantastic game of football. So I was really surprised going into this game that Ancelotti didn't make more changes. And he admitted that. And I mean, he's a class act. If you get something wrong, he comes out. A bit easier when you've come back from 2-0 down and you've won 3-2. You can give yourself the blame, but also the credit for making the changes. But in general terms, he is a class act and admitted in the interview after the match that he should have made changes to the starting 11. He underestimated how much effort the players put in the other night, but he rectified it at half-time and ultimately that they did get the win.
Yeah, and there is the Real Madrid thing, believe in coming from behind, where they've done it so many times on so many big occasions that, I was watching it with a friend and colleague of mine, and they were 2-0 down at half time, and I said, and he likes a bet, and I said, honestly, get on this. Because, you know,
I had no doubt. At 2-0, I thought they had the potential Real Madrid would score 5.5, let alone 2 against Al Maria.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sitting there thinking they're going to get beat. I genuinely thought, no, this is going to be tough. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see how this develops. Still anticipating that there was going to be... And when they kick off the second half and he's made three changes... And they get the ball forward and Al Maria can't get out of their own penalty box. You're thinking, well, it's only a matter of time before they get the first goal. And they were...
Yeah. And they've got plenty of time because they give them 11 minutes of added time at the end.
I had no problem with that because of the...
because the bars took so long,
It would have been interesting to see if Real Madrid hadn't have scored, how long that 11 would have gone on.
Still be going,
But Danny Carvajal, Bellingham. Bellingham's really interesting at the moment because I think he's playing the best football he's played since he's been at Real Madrid. But he hasn't been scoring as much. But yesterday he scored took the penalty. Dreadful penalty, took the penalty. But great header across goal for Danny Carvajal's win. I've in the other games he's been playing lately, he kind of carried Real Madrid at the start of the season, didn't he? His goals were a feature because, and I remember many a podcast saying, I don't know where he's playing. I'm not entirely sure yet, you know, what type of player he is, because I hadn't seen too much of him. England games, didn't see him play for Borussia Dortmund that much. And I was trying to think, well, what's he like? He keeps getting in the box. He keeps scoring goals. If a goalkeeper makes a save, it's him that's following up. They haven't got a centre forward, but Bellingham is playing like that. Now I'm seeing, I mean, I knew he was good. As the season's gone on, I knew he was quality. I would argue that he's playing his best football now, and he hadn't scored for a few weeks. But in general terms of an all-round midfield player,
yeah,
everything.
That's what
absolutely
he is.
Absolutely everything. Yeah.
Yeah, the run of goals at the start of the season was freakish. And this is Bellingham, I think. This is that all-action, everything midfield player that that they paid 100 million for. And
it's beginning to remind me of Ruud Gullit.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because Ruud Gullit played in anywhere down the middle.
Yeah.
So he could play sweeper, centre-back. He could play midfield as a holding midfield player, an attacking midfield player, centre-forward. And the reason Ruud Gullit can do that, and the reason I look at Jude Bellingham, is they have the athleticism, they have the quality and intelligence to play in any position. You don't want to waste them out wide in any role, but anywhere, they're just that good. You know, Ruud Gullit was like that. He was physically, you know, immaculate, over 6 foot tall, powerful. He was quick. He could play, as I say, play anywhere down the middle of the pitch, and in some games, do all those jobs at once. And Jude Bellingham looks like that to me in terms of the physical side of him, his athleticism, the quality, the intelligence. And sometimes that players like that, you just have to let. It's almost like the older kid playing against the younger kids. And they're bigger and stronger and faster, and they can do everything. And you think, well, where do we want him most? Can we, you know, where can we play him where he's going to score goals? But then we need him at the other end to defend. So at the moment, Jude Bellingham is doing all aspects of a midfield player. He's blocking shots and he's blocking crosses and he's tracking runners back. And then when it goes up the other end of the pitch or when it's then to be won in midfield, he's fighting and hustling and tussling away in the centre of the pitch. Then when it goes into the penalty box, he's there as well. So it's really fascinating to watch his development at Real Madrid. And credit to Ancelotti in not trying to harness it and tie it down to, I want you to play here and stay here. I want you to play there and stay there. Stay on the right side of midfield, stay on the left, stay in attacking midfield, stay as a defensive midfield. He's just got the freedom to go and have an impact on any game of football. And he's been absolutely superb. And at the moment, I think he's playing fantastically well. And then the leadership qualities on top of that for a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, it's what he's doing. So I think, you know, there have been criticisms I've seen recently, particularly in the English press. Oh, Bellingham stopped scoring. And you're thinking, yeah, but he's actually still playing.
Yeah, that's people who aren't watching
really
it, isn't
well.
It? Yeah,
really
yeah.
Well.
Shall we talk about the other games? There are 8 more games to get through and some really good ones on Sunday, including Betis 2, Barcelona 4. Ferran Torres was the... he scored a hat-trick, obviously. So, obviously, standout performance by him. Particularly the second half, hugely enjoyable. And 4-2, it's a nice gloss because they got two late goals, which certainly helps Barcelona look like they won it convincingly. But obviously, a good period of time, half an hour or something, it was 2-2.
Yeah, and it was classic Barcelona at the moment, wasn't it? They were on top. I thought they played well. Pau Cubas, he was actually 17 today, 16
yes.
yesterday.
Happy birthday.
17 today, yeah. And he was immaculate. Mm. You know, he was the bench was quite low. It went down. You look at the bench and you're thinking, why is he playing? There was obviously some players missing. They had the cup match against Athletic Club in midweek. They scrambled their way through the earlier game against Unionistas last week. And I say typical Barcelona, they went 1-0 down in that game to one of the best goals, best volleys I've seen in years. And there was a haunted look on Xavi's face during that. When they went 1-0 down, you're thinking, well, this could be, if they lose this, then he's in, whether he'd go or be in real trouble, but they won that 3-1. They go 2-0 up in this game, you're thinking, oh, that's good. They're, you know, for Barcelona, things look a bit, Betis haven't got two or three goals in them. And Betis did come back, thanks to some excellent play from Isco. And he was, Barcelona to then go back and win and get the other two goals. I thought they deserved the win.
Yeah.
But it was really good periods in the game from Betis. It was a really good match. And but as I say, typical Barcelona, wasn't plain sailing, despite the fact they're 2-0 up. 2-1, you're thinking, oh, and then 2-2, and that haunted look on Xavi's face came back again. He's under pressure, he knows that. It is a high-pressure job. But then João Félix, I like João Félix's goal. That was a really skillful
quality
finish.
Goals, weren't they? Because
Isco's first one.
Is the first one where he gets the technique right, and he sort of has to hit down on it. It's an awkward one to strike, isn't it? And it's brilliant.
Isco's first goal.
Yeah.
Yes, and the second one is a running behind, wasn't it? Flicked it over the goalkeeper. Yeah. So there's some really good goals. And what Isco has done this season is exceptional.
Yeah.
You know, and I know people know I've got a soft spot for him. Just like watching good footballers and skillful footballers and footballers that play with a smile on their face when they're playing at their best. They're playing it. It looks like they're playing for fun. They're enjoying it. Isco's been incredible this year for Betis. Mm. They had him on a 1-year deal, didn't they? But he has signed a longer contract, rightly so. So it was a really good game of football, and it followed on from all of yesterday's action was really good, and this one didn't disappoint. And it's a big win for Barcelona.
Yeah.
And Betis were unbeaten at home. You know, don't score lots of goals. Hence the reason when Barcelona went 2-0 up, I'm thinking that Betis haven't got two goals in them. But Isco is the one that makes a difference. But I thought Barcelona deserved it in the end. And Lewandowski came off.
Well, can
I don't know whether that was because of the cup match coming up. Possibly, it's a big
Philip's
game.
Point about that. He says, finally see Xavi make a big decision with Lewandowski. Not the reason for the win, of course, but he seems he's finally taking serious action. See why Xavi has faith in Ferran. He also mentions Lamine Yamal, which we'll get to in a second. But on the Lewandowski point, Philip's been getting increasingly frustrated with him. Was it right call to take him off?
Yeah, they got the win.
Yeah.
Ferran Torres is amongst the goals. He's confident at the moment. But I have no doubt Lewandowski starts against Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey on Wednesday, I think they play.
Yeah.
So I think it was a question of that. It's a big, big competition for Barcelona. They're looking at Athletic Barcelona Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Athletic away from home in the Copa del Rey with Real Madrid out. It's a big opportunity for Barcelona. Xavi's under pressure. If he wins a trophy, he'd be fine. So I think that was part of the reason why Lewandowski came off. And also, Torres is scoring.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make a change and bring on Vitor Roque, then Lewandowski would be the one to be substituted. The big decision comes if Lewandowski has got better lately.
Yeah.
And he was better in the Super Cup. He was good in the other games that Barcelona have played recently. So I think there's signs of Lewandowski getting back to his best, or better than he has been. I don't think he's ever going to get back to the best version that we saw at Bayern, 40-odd goals every season. But he's still an important player. He joins in the celebrations. There's no sign of a older player, experienced player, world-class player getting the ump because he's been substituted. If he's been benched and they score a goal, he's amongst the rest of the players enthusiastically joining him with a celebration. So I think he's a good person and finding it tough this season. But I have no doubt he starts against Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey.
Yeah, and Lamine Yamal is getting a lot of love for his performance as well.
Yeah, and we keep forgetting him. You know, he's ridiculously young age. And, you know, it's amazing this thing. I mean, the Pau Cubarsí, 17 today, He didn't look phased either. You know, you're playing for Barcelona. And so you look at the young players that are coming into the game now. Valencia had a 16-year-old winger on the bench who played in the Copa del Rey midweek as well. So it's a new development now where we're looking at players in the past where physically you probably would have thought, can't play men's football at 16 or 17 on a regular basis. But Gavi's done it, Pedri's done it. You know, Real Madrid have had some players that have come through at a young age as well. And we're seeing it now and more often. And I still blink and go 16.
Yeah.
And Lamine Yamal and Cubarsí have shown that even a big club like Barcelona, which is more astonishing than anything else, because the amount of, there must be above Cubarsí players between the 18 and 21 year old bracket that have been at Barcelona B that haven't made the first team. But for some reason, they've seen enough in a 16 year old who's just left school to make that leap into the first team away from home against Real Betis.
Yeah.
So, no, congratulations to him and Lamine Yamal was fantastic again.
Girona. Normally, this performance from Girona would be getting all the headlines, but obviously we're talking about it third, even though they are top. Real Madrid got a game in hand for the Super Cup. 5-1 against Sevilla. So they went behind early on, but boy, they came back with a bang, didn't they? Dovbyk got a hat-trick inside 6 minutes. And a typical Girona performance. Like you said, in their previous game against Almeria, we were thinking, hang on, what's happened here? But this was this season's Girona, wasn't it? Attacking, getting bodies in the box, every opportunity to go forward and play attacking football.
Well, for the first 10 minutes, I thought it was an hangover from the week before. And Sevilla looked the better team. And it didn't come against the run of play. It was a massive surprise when Isaac Romero scored. And you're thinking, oh, you know, they look a bit jaded. Is there going to be a fall off in terms of the level of the tempo of the game that they've been playing all season? And 13, 15 and 19 minutes, the goals were from Dovbyk, ripped Sevilla apart. And then the game was won. And then it's just, when you look at it, it's incredible when you see the different moods between the two sets of players. There's nothing but misery amongst the Sevilla players. And they've got some really outstanding footballers that have had outstanding careers. And they're playing it as if they've got the world on their shoulders. And you're looking at Girona, have got these players that we didn't know an awful lot about until this season. You know, some have established La Liga players, but now you look at it and think, oh, I didn't realise he was that good. I didn't realise he was that good. I didn't realise the manager was that good. They just ripped Sevilla apart. And we were conversing, texting each other during the game about how they're good fun to watch.
Mm.
And I'm trying to see what, because last night they played another formation. You know, David Lopez was injured. Wampy starts. He comes off injured. And a youngster came on as a sub that, Antal Jakob Ishvili, 19-year-old, Hungarian background, but lived in Spain for a long time. I think his brother's a young professional at Barcelona. Came into the team, and I kept thinking, they were 19. And he was playing alongside Daley Blind. And I'm looking at the team, and I'm thinking, what makes these so good? And all of a sudden, it dawned on me, and I said to you something really basic. They get more players in the penalty area at both ends of the pitch than opponents throughout the 90 minutes. So if they counter-attack and they score a goal, you look at it and go, there's four Sevilla defenders there and there's five Girona attackers. And then Sevilla attacking and you go, there's five Girona defenders and there's three Sevilla attackers. They literally, they've got the ability to get so basic football sometimes, up and down the pitch with enthusiasm, with integrity in terms of, I can get back and help my teammates defend at one end of the pitch. I can get forward and help my teammates attack and score a goal at the other. So sometimes you're looking thinking, have they only got 11? That's the strength of their game, the energy that they're showing. And the quality, of course. I mean, Dovbyk's goal. I mean, the one I think was when he drives towards goal, he makes a run down the channel. He's a big strapping centre forward who's got decent pace. He actually looked a lot fitter than he did at the start of the season when I did wonder whether he was going to be a bit slow, a bit ponderous. He looks in great shape now, makes a channel run, gets the ball, severe players drop off, and he just runs at them, cuts inside and unleashes a perfect finish. I mean, it's whenever they score a goal, you're looking at it, we've got five players in the box there. So that's the basic requirements. And when you see the celebrations afterwards, fantastic. The song got on my nerves in the end, I must admit. It's part of the atmosphere, the lap of honour after each game, the manager joining in. You're looking at all these smiley, happy faces in the stadium, on the pitch, and then you do have to feel a little bit for the Sevilla players who just rock bottom now. And it's hard to see how they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, and So what do we do with Sevilla? We need to talk about them briefly, don't we? So Kike Sanchez-Flores came in for a bit of grief for his decision-making after the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. When you're a manager and a coach and a team that's finding it impossible to go in any direction. I mean, they get their win midweek away at Getafe in the Copa del Rey. So he's built his team around that. Childan coming in and playing out of the blue was a bit of a surprise. I think he has to refrain from chopping and changing too much, which is a trait managers have when they're struggling. Instead of trying to get something settled, pick a settled 11, try to get some partnerships, try to get the players to get some confidence. What you do find in general, though, is they go from trying to find solution after solution after solution, and just makes the whole thing a lot more complicated. So I think he's got the experience to probably know that. And at the same time, they're signing new players. He's trying to fight. The problem is he doesn't know his best 11 starting team. Doesn't know his best defensive partnerships, best midfield partnerships. And there's areas away the African Cup of Nations. So who plays up front? He's at Romero last night. It was Ocampos alongside him. So I think he has to try and settle for his best team. Stick with it. And at the same time, they play Atletico Madrid in the Copa del Rey. So it's a competition they still want to do well in. But I think the priority is they might be saved by the fact there's three teams worse than them. But it's not going to be like last season. I'm not even sure Kike Sanchez-Flores sees the season out, to be honest. I don't see any improvement.
Mad, isn't it?
A 5-1 thrashing. If things, they've got a tough run of fixtures coming up in La Liga. It's going to be interesting to see what happens at that club.
At least they've got Hannibal.
I see Hannibal game on.
Yeah, running around kicking people.
and moaning at his teammates. He was literally bullying Pedrosa at left back. Hannibal came on at left side midfield, went roaming all over the pitch. You have to admire him for wanting to get on the ball, but his positional play was all over the gaff. And you're looking and thinking, well, they've lost the ball now. He's right wing. And he's playing the little passes. He's telling everyone where to play those passes. He got booked after coming on for the first minute. I'm thinking he's going to get sent off here. He didn't. But every time you saw him, he was moaning at a teammate. And that's the last thing they need now. Some young player coming in from Man United who couldn't get a game, coming into Sevilla. Times is tough. And the last thing you need is a new teammate jumping on your back and pointing out every mistake you made. So it's going to be interesting to see any impact the signings have that they've picked up in this transfer window. It's not an easy job for a manager, I have to be honest, but my advice would be to try and find your best 11 as quickly as possible and try and stick with it, if possible, to give them an understanding of how they're going to keep it as basic as possible and try and get some shred of confidence going. But at the moment, it looks a million miles away. They got absolutely devastated by a brilliant Girona team last night.
Yeah. So we'll do the other game from Sunday, shall we? Osasuna 3, Getafe 2. Really entertaining, wasn't it? Again, Osasuna, 2-0 up, Getafe come back into it, late winner. Which Osasuna sort of needed, really, didn't they? Because, for all we praise them, they've been in a pretty poor run.
That's been an underwhelming season from Osasuna. They go out at the Copa del Rey midweek against Real Sociedad at home. They had European football to look forward to. Even the goal scorers in this game, Raul Garcia de Haro, Ica Muñoz, Jesus Areso, we'll talk about the goal in a minute, unfamiliar players. You look at their lineup and it's chopping and changing, and they've got a really good squad of players. I've said in the past about them having a squad of 20 players that are all pretty much similar in terms of talent. But whenever I see Osasuna play now, I'm thinking, well, where's Moncayola? Where's this player? Where's that player? All these, and three unfamiliar names on the score sheet here. 2-0 up, Getafe looked dead and buried. Mayoral gets back to 2-1, and then Maximovic gets it back to 2-2 within space of 3 or 4 minutes. And then we have the goal where everyone's talking about. That's the reason we're talking about this game. It was a good game, good comeback from Getafe, but Jesus Areso scores the goal, which people are talking about being goal of the season.
My hat.
No player in the history of football is shot from the corner flag.
He gets a terrible cross. It was a good game.
It's a good cross. It's a good cross, which ends up in a goal. It's a good
because
cross.
Because all the players, his team at the back post, is there? But because he sort of, it's a weird technique.
He digs one out, doesn't he? Because he's under pressure. There's no room to go anywhere.
And he just hoofs it.
Drives it. Yeah. Whacks it hard.
And it sort of comes off. It comes off sort of off his instep, isn't it? And it just swerves up and over the goalkeeper and dips in. But
you can't even blame the keeper, can you?
No. Yeah. but it's just and to be fair to Aris, after the game he said it was a lucky goal. So
oh, did he?
Yeah. So
the people are saying goal of the season, goal of the century.
Yeah,
unusual goal. But it was a cross. No player in the history of football has ever shot from there. No one has ever thought, the goalkeeper's off his line. I can bend this in the top corner with all the power I can.
He did have teammates in the box, but they weren't there. So the obvious thing to do, which is what he did, was just get the ball in the box.
Yeah.
And that's all he did, get the ball in the box.
But it was a good game and an important win for us this sooner.
Yeah, yes. Right, so the game you did, Valencia 1, Athletic 0. I put this on, Terry, I know, and I heard your voice, and I was saying, oh, good, an actual... They need more co-coms on their games on La Liga TV because sometimes, some big games sometimes, and the guys are there on their own and they all do a great job, but it's hard work commentating on your own. I don't know because I do plenty of it. So anyway, and then it wasn't a great game, to be fair, was it? It was a bit of...
I enjoyed it.
Did you?
Whether it was because I was in it and involved in it. I thought it was a really good... I know it was only 1-0.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it.
I was a bit underwhelmed by Athletic because I think they've been really good and I was a bit average from them.
I get that.
Yeah.
And Nico Williams was not at his best.
Yeah.
I saw that Dimitri Fulquier was trending in Spain.
Oh, right.
And it was about the level of his performance.
Right.
He's a player I've always liked, you know.
Mm.
And they were calling him the, Cafu and stuff like that because he did stop Nico Williams in his tracks. Nico Williams has been brilliant lately, but the athleticism and strength of Fulquier nullified that threat, which takes a lot of the game away from Athletic Club at the moment because he's so good, so quick, and yet Fulquier was able to match him in terms of speed and even gave Valencia something going forward. I've always liked Fulquier. He does a good job, but at the moment, Baraka has got him really playing well. So I think that was an important part of this game, hence the reason why Athletic Club didn't play as well, one or two changes in central midfield. Of course, knowing Iñaki Williams, but Berenguer made up for that with a couple of goals against Real Sociedad last week. I enjoyed it. I thought not every game has to be a 5-2 or a 5-3 to be... I'm glad we had a goal. And it was Hugo Juru was the difference between the two teams in the end. We were his ninth goal of the season, so a decent season from him individually.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I think it was a lot to enjoy in that game, despite the fact that it was just the one goal. Celebrations at the Mestalla afterwards. I mean, they're fortunate, the owners of Valencia. I mean, there are 45,000 in the stadium.
You still see Peter Lim out signs. I think it's behind the dugout. I think there's someone with a big Lim go home sign who puts it up behind Baraja, which is good placement.
I mean, when you look at how the planning of the club, they've relied on youth.
Yeah.
Peter Lim didn't know how good these young players were.
No.
He probably wasn't too sure how Baraja was going to do, Ruben Baraja. And when you look at where they are now and the enjoyment, and the scenes at the Mestalla, they've got legends as manager. They've got a whole group of young players that are really good. So it's worked out well for Valencia. Although I don't want to be patronising, but that's the minimum requirement. We're talking Valencia.
Mm, yeah.
You know, we were talking in commentary the other night about previous legends of the club, and you're thinking, this young lot might go on to become legends, but when you're talking about recent legends of Valencia, they're a million miles away from being a team that historically are one of the biggest clubs and most successful teams in La Liga. But like
Peter Lim has got away with reframing our expectations of Valencia.
Exactly. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make. When you think of David Villa and David Silva and players like that that were not so long ago, and then you go back to Ayala
when
and
they came
Neymar
in,
and
I think it was at the time people were furious because they were struggling to qualify for the Champions League. You know, and that
exactly.
was that's where, and they
Yeah.
were all waving their hankies.
You
And
know,
stuff
Emery was
and,
doing it all the time, wasn't he? Getting them to near the top of the league. And so it's kind of, as you said, we've lowered our expectations, but I'm enjoying Valencia and enjoying the Athletic, and I enjoyed this match, to be honest.
Real Sociedad beat Celta Vigo. Now, Celta got a good cup win, didn't they? Again, while we're sort of incorporating the cup game.
At Valencia.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So they're still going strong in that, but in relegation trouble still, aren't they? They simply are. And a home defeat against Real Sociedad, who've been struggling to score goals, but they scored a really, really good one here. Bryce Mendes, who then, slight bugbear of the of our podcast, isn't it? That, can't celebrate because he played for them. Celebrate the goal, I understand.
Yeah, I get the non. I mean, he apologised after scoring.
Yeah.
I don't get that. I get the non-celebrating. I get the not, you know, perhaps running over towards your old supporters and giving them a winding them up. I was working out. There was four first-team players playing in this game for Real Sociedad because they play each other on Tuesday in the Copa del Rey at Celta again. And Alguacil came up with some names that we'd not seen before, heard before. An astonishing array of young talent at that club. And he didn't throw the game. When you saw the team, you probably could make the accusations. I was chucking this. They're going for the cup match. But there was four players, I think, starting in that game that you could call first-team players. The rest weren't fringe players, young players, one or two players making their debuts. But he had confidence and faith in that they could get that job done. And he was right. He was right too. Great goal from Bryce Mendes. I was really disappointed in Celtic because they have been better lately. There was no response when Bryce Mendes scored. I mean, I'm talking about second half. When you're losing 1-0, You hope that, well, we've got nothing to lose. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. We've got to get, forward quicker. We've got to get more players forward. And they didn't, Celta. And it was just, I thought, well, that was strange. Why was there no threat of piling on the pressure towards the end against the reserve team, basically? So it's weird football. Real Sociedad will bring all their players back for the cup match and probably Celta beat them.
Apparently,
so they couldn't beat the reserves, but they might beat the first team on Tuesday night.
Apparently they're staying. So that would imply that they've all, that everyone's there and the whole setup has moved over for a few days.
Yeah.
Right, Alaves 1, Cadiz 0, which we wouldn't normally spend a lot of time on, but Sergio got the sack after the game, which obviously is no surprise. I mean, you said you were surprised that he'd stayed as long as he had. That was at 16 without a win. It got to 17 against a team. It was an opportunity, wasn't it? It was a chance for Cadiz to get some points in this game, and they didn't.
Yeah.
15 points, 18th place, and out he goes.
They didn't deserve anything in this game, but it was unfortunate for Sergio that Ivan Aleko makes a silly challenge in the box, gives away a penalty. Luis Rioja tucks it away. He looked relieved at the end of the game, Sergio. It was almost, the interview he gave was, it might be bye-bye. I know what's happening. I know the situation. He looked kind of relieved that he knew he was going to get the sack. And it was almost like...
Didn't have any more answers.
Put me out of my misery.
It's
best for all. I didn't want to resign. You need to change. I'm not getting anything out of this group of players.
Yeah.
And we're repeating the same stories week after week after week. And then on Saturday, we did hear the news that he'd been fired. So it needed, a lot of respect for him. He's done a good job there. He does decent jobs wherever he goes. And I'm sure he'll be back. But it sometimes in life, it's a change, just a change is needed. Now it'll be interesting to see who takes up the job and what they can do. So it's a decent squad of players. That's why my issue with Sergio was that they weren't scoring any goals. 17 without a win, they went for two out of the first four. And I didn't expect them to maintain that. But I thought with the group he's got now, better players than what they had 2 years ago, for instance, with Alvaro Severa when they first came up, you're looking at it and thinking that they should be well out of relegation trouble this year, but they're not. They're in the thick of it. Change had to be made. But he looked kind of relieved that it was all over when it was finally announced.
Yeah. Las Palmas keep on going from strength to strength. So a 2-0 win at Rayo Vallecano with a bit of a helping hand from Rayo, who were on top in this game for large parts of it, but somehow contrived to have a man sent off, give a stupid goal away. It was well finished, to be fair. And so there's an element of Las Palmas winning it, Rayo Vallecano losing it.
Yeah, Rayo, for the first 20 minutes, could have been 3-0 up. Alvaro Garcia missed the hat-trick of chances. He then eventually gets sent off. So it was for two yellows, miserable afternoon for him. They only won one home game this season. And before every time they play at home, the opposing manager says, we know this is a really difficult place to come to. It's not anymore. But for both two spells in each half, at the beginning of each half, 15, 20 minutes, they looked like Iraola's team, but they couldn't maintain it. And Las Palmas, 15 minutes in, I made a note. First time they've been in the attacking half, brief possession. It literally was all Rayo. And Issy Palazón was looking better. They were looking good. But then the mess up for the first goal, as you said, tucked away by Alberto Molero really well. And then Javi Munoz with the second to wrap it up. Astonishing what they're doing. 31 points, eighth position. I tipped them for relegation, got it completely wrong. The team's evolved. The style of play has evolved. They still like possession, but there is an end product. It's a different front three from the one that started the season. I mean, you've got Munir, Sandro and Alberto Molero. None of them played up front the first half dozen games of the season. So they've learned really quick in the top division and they're a million miles away from being in a relegation battle.
Villarreal 1, Mallorca 1 finishes it off. So another a draw down at the bottom. Didn't get too many. Actually, it was the only draw this weekend, wasn't it? And Villarreal just cut off. The whole thing is frustrating. They can't get it right.
I mean, the goal they concede, I mean, they should have won this. The goal they concede is dreadful. They're all defending deeper and deeper and deeper. Javier Yarbrez comes on as a sub within a couple of minutes. He gets an equaliser. It's 11th draw for Mallorca, another draw for them. So it was always going to be a tough game, but it did look like Villarreal were playing with fear. And Marcelino, I was looking at some. That's now 42 goals conceded. Only Granada and Almeria. No, actually, Granada 41, they played tonight. So they've conceded more than Granada. Almeria were 43 before the three conceded. No other team has conceded more than 30 goals before going into that round of fixtures. And we're talking Villarreal and losing 15 conceded in the five previous games under new manager Marcelino. No athleticism in midfield. Need younger players. They've got to look at the defence as well, but there are players missing them through injury. But this is a dreadful version of Villarreal. The only saving grace is the Sorloth and Gerard Moreno and maybe Morales. The front three will score your goals. But it's shipping them in at the other end, which is a major issue. They deserve to win this. Aguirre said after the game, we started badly and got worse. And yet somehow we've got a draw because when you play an opponent who are playing with fear, no confidence, and a 1-0 holding on to a 1-0 win lead without being under pressure, and then they start defending as deep as they did, and you're only one goal behind, Mallorca, just get the ball in the box and something might happen. That's exactly what it did. So massive problems at Villarreal.
Yes, so there we are. That's all we've got for La Liga this week. Granada versus Atletico tonight, and then we're into a round of Copa del Rey game. So Celta Vigo, Real Sociedad, as Terry says, on Tuesday night. Mallorca, Girona, Athletic against Barcelona at the Wednesday night games. And Thursday is Atletico against Sevilla. Can't watch them in the UK. And Ireland, well done, Spanish FA. That's unless.
I heard that last game was really good, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid.
Yes, well, yeah,
what we're meant to do if you can't watch it anywhere legally, you know.
Yeah,
you've got to try and find it somewhere. It's a
a
nuisance.
So you repoint your VPN and you watch it on a website of another supplier or a carrier somewhere else in the world. But the simple thing is, if you haven't done a deal, stick it on YouTube. But I suppose everyone can watch it on YouTube. Well, there are solutions. Do a deal anyway. There we are. So enjoy the football if you can watch it this weekend. We'll see Patreons later this week, and we'll see everybody for another podcast ahead of a slightly weird round of games, or in the midst of a weird round of games next time round. So we will see you for that. Thank you very much, everybody, and we'll see you soon.